Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. This hour, we're taking a close look at how the internet and our relationship to it changed during the pandemic. And of course, we can't really talk about this unless we talk about the behemoth that is Amazon. For many, the company was a huge help at the start of the pandemic. It was a way to get goods and necessities in relative safety for the buyer, of course. But at the same time, reports surfaced that Amazon warehouse workers were working in unsafe conditions where COVID precautions weren't in place. In fall, Amazon acknowledged that nearly 20,000 employees had been infected. And while small businesses suffered greatly in 2020, Amazon had a huge year financially. One response to that, many consumers decided to try to live without using Amazon. But it isn't as simple as not ordering underwear online. New York Times reporter John Herman covers tech and media for the Style section and the magazine and recently published an article looking into this shift called Life Without Amazon, parenthesis, well, almost. John, welcome to All of It.
Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, listeners, we want to hear from you. Are you someone who doesn't use Amazon to shop? What alternatives have you found? What have been some of your biggest hurdles in eliminating Amazon from your life if you've tried? Give us a call at 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280, or you can always tweet to us or leave us a message at Instagram. Our handles are the same for Twitter and Instagram, at All of It WNYC. So it's interesting, I think. People probably know this, but maybe some people don't. When you shop or engage with Amazon, John, it doesn't mean just shopping from Amazon. You know, Amazon has sucked up a lot of other entities, like Goodreads, for example. What are some of the other Amazon properties that aren't really obvious?
You know, a lot of the people that I spoke to who are trying to avoid Amazon, they personally were surprised when they really started looking into this, that they were using services or engaging with companies that were owned by Amazon. Twitch, the popular streaming service, came up with some younger people. That's been owned by Amazon for a while, although it's not much of a secret. One that really snagged someone in this process was IMDb, which is sort of in the Amazon universe of companies. That was a decision made in the late 90s. But still, if you're really trying to escape Amazon, that's kind of a tough one. There aren't great IMDb alternatives. There are much bigger ones, obviously. Whole Foods is a big exception for a lot of people because it's a particular kind of grocery store, and people have their loyalty or affinity for it. People love their Ring cameras. That's owned by Amazon. And then there's the sort of like under the hood stuff that's a little bit less obvious. So many of the biggest websites in the world are powered by Amazon technology. And so depending on how complete you want to be in your abstinence, you really have to cut out some major companies. If you're using Zoom more at work, you're using Amazon Web Services more. If you're watching Netflix more at home, you're using Amazon Web Services more.
If you're listening to New York Public Radio, we are hosted by Amazon Web Services. Audible sponsors some of our programming. That's another Amazon subsidiary. How did Amazon become the go-to for web services?
This was sort of an early long-term bet in the style that Jeff Bezos is sort of fond of making and has found, you know, he's found a lot of success this way. Amazon realized quite a number of years ago now that it's own internal infrastructure was extremely robust, could be used for lots of other things. With such a diverse portfolio of companies, Amazon also realized that they were already effectively powering all sorts of different internet services, video services and audio services and communication services and stuff like that. So they started licensing it out. They offered some really aggressive pricing and terms. And by the time the older cloud providers realized what was going on and companies like Microsoft and Google started playing catch up, it was too late. just like in online retail, Amazon was way out in front.
Let's go to Adrian, who's calling in from Bed-Stuy on line 3. Hi, Adrian. Thanks for calling all of it.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I don't like to use Amazon because of their labor practices, but I found that the biggest hurdle is being able to watch some of the best content on Amazon Prime, like their access to BBC and the new series of movies by the director of Steve McQueen, Small Axe. So I get around it with a kind of grift. I stay logged in on my elderly aunt's account, and I sometimes order groceries for her. And it lets me watch great movies, and then I buy books locally. Thanks.
Adrian, thanks for calling. And, you know, in your piece, one person you spoke to, John, said, boycotting Amazon is, quote, not just a choice, but an ongoing practice. What did he mean by that?
Well, I mean, it's first of all, avoiding Amazon is something that's gotten harder by the year, and I think will continue to get harder in the coming years. And that's what drives a lot of people to sort of think about this, that the realization that Amazon is in every possible way sort of growing. But yeah, you really realize when you start to try to do this, as I heard from lots of the people I talked to, that, you know, there are people in your life who you share things with who maybe use Amazon services, and you have to compromise there. There are situations that you hadn't really considered before where you're ordering from Amazon for very particular reasons. Maybe it's the availability of something that you can't really get anywhere else. But more often than that, it's convenience. It's wanting something within a day or two that you can't otherwise get that quickly. And so it really does feel to a lot of people like working through something like an addiction or you know, trying to adopt some new healthy lifestyle or something where you're constantly checking yourself and constantly catching new things and analyzing your own habits and stuff like that. It's certainly not enough to just say, I'm avoiding Amazon. It requires ongoing work.
Let's go to Justin, who's calling from Alphabet City on line 6. He's got an inter-Amazon marriage, I guess I would call it. Hi, Justin.
Well, inter-Amazon in belief only. In actual economics, it's completely anti-Amazon because it's my wife who is the anti-Amazon person and doesn't want to give Bezos any of her money. But I don't really care much about Bezos. He's not a priority enemy for me right now, considering everything that's going on. And I like the convenience of Amazon. You know, Amazon's one of the biggest companies that we have, so it's a source of power for our nation. So I think it'd be patriotic to support Amazon right now. And actually, if you don't mind, I have like a paragraph that I wrote as an emotional response to what the events of yesterday. Do you mind if I read that briefly?
I'm going to say yes with the caveat that if it goes off the rails, I'm going to ask Juliana to pull down the sound. Is that okay? Is that fair?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, go for it.
You got it. Okay. Donald Trump is right now an active terrorist with followers who stormed the Capitol building successfully. The right thing to do would be to convict him of treason in the Supreme Court and have Chief Justice John Roberts write the opinion sentencing Trump in consensus with all 9 justices. If we don't do this, even if he is in prison or in Moscow, his evil powers will continue to grow, and there is a possibility that in the end, Trump could become the first king of the world, thereby shaping what globalism is to become. He must be convicted of treason now.
I think we've got it, Jeff. I think we've got it. I understand it was an emotional day, and I understand you wanting to write that. A lot of people have been calling in and having very strong feelings, so thank you for sharing that. Let's get back on track with New York Times reporter John Herman. What we've been talking about is trying to live without Amazon. Kate on Twitter wrote, I did almost all my Christmas shopping IRL, but it was tough. Amazon's prices are cheaper. Did you find that when you talk to people, John, for your piece, that the price point is an issue?
I did. That did come up, but it was interesting that no matter what the reason for the boycott or for abstaining from Amazon was, there was some level of kind of guilt and sort of a sense of obligation. So I think people were almost self-conscious about sharing that maybe if something was a couple dollars more expensive, they, you know, they were sort of portraying this as something that was worth a price, some price. And so that didn't seem to be the main driving factor. I mean, to get back to sort of stark black and white type of things and to sort of tap into the broader mood here, plenty of people did talk about this in very serious terms, where things like price and convenience were talked about as just completely secondary. And these are people who, as was mentioned by a previous caller, who are very concerned about labor practices, who are concerned not just about Amazon size, the wealth of Jeff Bezos, but about you know, the global economic system, the American economy, inequality, and things like that. Amazon has, because of its presence in our lives and because of its prominence as a company and the prominence of its leaders, it has become a symbol for a lot of other fights and in a lot of other fights. So, you know, if you're talking to leftist organizers now, Amazon is a subject that comes up a lot. If you're talking to people on the far right, particularly in relation to the president, you know, they see Amazon in starkly different terms, but they also have a problem with the company. It's sort of as in daily life, in politics, it's pretty hard to avoid Amazon. And so, of course, people have to really think about it.
Let's go to Joe on line four. Joe, thanks for calling Olivet. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to share one way I tried to boycott Amazon this past Christmas was just when family members and friends asked for Christmas lists, whether we were doing Secret Santa or whatnot. I would just have my items and make a note under each item to encourage them to not buy from Amazon specifically, and perhaps use alternatives like Etsy, or even using Amazon as a search engine where you can find the different brands that carry the product that you're looking for, and then going directly to those brands to make that purchase.
And why did you decide to do that? What was really in your heart?
So I just know Amazon has been getting richer with the pandemic going on and the ease of purchasing these items. And I wanted to support smaller businesses across the country or locally. Etsy is a great platform where artists can go on and create these products. And they're typically customizable as well, which is a good feature. And then I think encouraging friends to think more about their purchase habits too, rather than just falling back on that same ease, the closest or the lowest hanging fruit sort of thing, which is, I think, Amazon.
Thanks for calling in, Joe. Let's go to T on line three. Hi, T. Thanks for calling in.
Hi. Sorry, you hear me?
You're on the air, yeah.
Okay, great. Hi. So I called, I said to the screener that I work for Amazon, and so sometimes I don't like to support Amazon as a consumer. It's very separate from the way that the work that I do, but as a consumer, the reasons are partly because of the labor practices and partly because of the effect on local business and just smaller businesses in general, or just like any brick and mortar stores in general. So the ways that I avoid it is, one, I sometimes we get gift cards for work. So I will only use Amazon really if I have a gift card. Mm-hmm. And then for watching content, which another caller mentioned, my parents already have a Prime account. So I use that, which I wouldn't, but I barely use it in general. Right now I actually have a free membership, but I like a free trial for the month, but I'm going to cancel it at the end of the month. But then I just try to order things, even especially with the pandemic, I don't go anywhere. But because but with the with ordering things, I tend to go to like Home Depot or Bed Bath & Beyond, which may also probably be using Amazon I'm realizing from listening to this today. And then I also order from like Barnes & Noble because I know that they have, even though it's a big company, of course, they still have had a harder time. Bookstores have had a harder time. There's a local bookstore in my town. And I also, even with the pandemic, some of the stores in my town have done like curbside locally.
Sure.
So the biggest thing is I remember being really excited one time for my mom's birthday. I got all of her, everything that she got for her birthday, like, didn't come from Amazon. I was, she appreciated it too, although she uses it more. And Etsy was also mentioned. And I try to reach, I have in the past tried to reach out directly to the provider, which the last caller, Joe, I think, mentioned doing too. Kind of, I liked the idea of using it as a search engine. So I thought that was cool. Those are all of my reasons. Yeah. But I always get,
Thanks so much. We really appreciate it. A lot of content in there. So, John, I'm, you know, a lot of the people are saying, I don't want to use it. I have these personal reasons for not using it. Does it work? Do people, individuals deciding not to use Amazon, is it just not even a blip? Is it a blip? What's the
impact? Well, I want to be careful not to dismiss consumer activism in general, because certainly there are plenty of examples in the past where people deciding not to purchase from a certain firm, you know, have made a difference. But this year in particular, and for many years prior, plenty more people have been turning to Amazon than have been turning away. And Amazon started this year, or at least started during the pandemic, having a pretty rough time. In March, there were extensive delays on deliveries. People weren't able to find what they wanted. There were lots of scams. There was price gouging. This is all stuff that really sort of brought the whole infrastructure to its knees for a brief time earlier this year. And you know, it was the workers in the fulfillment centers and the sortation centers who really carried that load more than anyone else. But in the months that followed, Amazon staffed up. They worked out some supply chain problems, and people remained, you know, many people remained stuck at home, and many other businesses remained closed. And so, I mean, it's just been a huge year for Amazon, not just in terms of sales, but in terms of the new habits that people are forming. You know, there was a colleague who wrote a really interesting story about how the pandemic was what finally brought Amazon to real popularity in Italy, a country where e-commerce was sort of slow to catch on for a whole variety of reasons, from the postal service and internet availability to just the sort of culture of shopping there. But the, you know, millions of people stuck at home looking for some sort of reliable way to get their stuff, they, whatever their feelings about e-commerce or Amazon in particular, they, you know, by and large, I mean, in greater numbers than ever before, kind of logged on. So in that sense, there is no indication that this is having any effect on Amazon. I'm sure they're thinking about it, but they didn't respond to any requests for comment about this. One thing that came up with a number of activists, especially people who'd been involved in consumer activism before, was that when you're dealing with a firm so large, and Walmart is a good example here, but also previous subjects of boycotts like Nike or Nestle, it's helpful to think about the firms that might get your business instead, or the people that might benefit from you making a different decision. Not buying a book on Amazon doesn't really mean much to Amazon, but buying that book at a local bookstore means quite a bit more to that store and the people who own it and work there. And now that Amazon sells practically everything, that decision can be repeated in all different sorts of ways. People mention Etsy as a place where you can buy all sorts of, you know, more handmade sort of small batch things. But people also, I've noticed in these conversations, mentioned companies that were previously kind of the bad guy, you know, Barnes and Noble, you know, that, you know, go back 20 years and everyone's worried about Barnes and Noble replacing the local bookstores. And that did sort of happen in a lot of cases. But, you know, it's still, even in that case, making a decision to go with a, you know, mid-sized chain is more of an effect on their bottom line than it has on Amazon.
The name of the piece, it's a great read, Life Without Amazon, Well, Almost. It's by reporter John Herman from the New York Times. Hey, John, thanks for sharing your reporting.
Thanks so much for having me on.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.